Bosch came back to the door and touched her shoulder, directed her to the living room. "Let's go sit down." In the living room, she sat down in the recliner while Bosch remained standing. "What were you looking for?"
"I told you, the cat."
"I heard you opening and closing drawers. The cat liked to hide in drawers?" Sheila shook her head as if to say he was bothering over nothing.
"I was just curious about my father. While I was here, I looked around, that's all."
"And where's your car?"
"I parked it by the front office. I didn't know if there'd be any parking here, so I parked there and walked in."
"And you were going to walk the cat back on a leash or something?"
"No, I was going to carry him. Why are you asking me all these questions?"
Bosch studied her. He could tell she was lying, but he wasn't sure what he should or could do about it. He decided to throw her a fastball. "Sheila, listen to me. If you were in any way involved with what happened to your brother, now's the time to tell me and to try to make a deal."
"What are you talking about?"
"Did you help your father that night? Did you help him carry your brother up the hill and bury him?" She brought her hands up to her face so quickly it was as if Bosch had thrown acid in her eyes. Through her hands, she yelled,
"Oh my God! Oh my God, I can't believe this is happening! What are you—"
She just as abruptly dropped her hands and stared at him with bewildered eyes.
"You think I had something to do with it? How could you think that?"
Bosch waited a moment for her to calm down before answering. "I think you're not telling me the truth about what's going on here. So it makes me suspicious, and it means I have to consider all possibilities." She abruptly stood up.
"Am I under arrest?"
Bosch shook his head. "No, Sheila, you're not. But I would appreciate it if you'd tell me that—"
"Then I'm leaving."
She stepped around the coffee table and headed for the door with a purposeful stride. "What about the cat?" Bosch asked. She didn't stop. She was through the door and into the night. Bosch heard her answer from outside.
"You take care of it."
Bosch stepped to the door and watched her walking down the trailer park's access road, out toward the management building where her car was parked. "Yeah," he said to himself. He leaned against the door frame and breathed some of the untainted air from the outside. He thought about Sheila and what she might have been doing. After a while, he checked his watch and looked back over his shoulder at the interior of the trailer. It was 11:15, and he was tired. But he decided he was going to stay and look for whatever it was she had been looking for. He felt something brush up against his leg and looked down to see a black cat rubbing up against him. He gently pushed it away with his leg. He didn't much care for cats. The animal came back and insisted on rubbing its head against Bosch's leg again. Bosch stepped back into the trailer, causing the cat to make a cautionary retreat of a few feet. "Wait here," Bosch said. "I've got some food in the car." Chapter 43. Downtown Arraignment Court was always a zoo. When Bosch entered the courtroom at 9:10 on Friday morning, he saw no judge yet on the bench, but a flurry of lawyers conferring and moving about the front of the courtroom like ants on a kicked-over hill. It took a seasoned veteran to know and understand what was going on at any given time in Arraignment Court. Bosch first scanned the rows of public seating for Sheila Delacroix, but didn't see her. He next looked for his partner and Portugal, the prosecutor, but they weren't in the courtroom either. He did notice that two cameramen were setting up equipment next to the bailiff's desk. Their position would give them a clear view of the glass prisoner docket once court was in session. Bosch moved forward and pushed through the gate. He took out his badge, palmed it, and showed it to the bailiff, who had been studying a computer printout of the day's arraignment schedule. "You got a Samuel Delacroix on there?" he asked.
"Arrested Wednesday or Thursday?"
"Thursday, yesterday." The bailiff flipped the top sheet over and ran his finger down a list. He stopped at Delacroix's name.
Got it. When will he come up? We've still got some Wednesdays to finish. When we get to Thursdays, it will depend on who his lawyer is, private or public. It'll be a PD, I think. They go in order. You're looking at an hour at least. That's if the judge starts at 9. Last I heard, he wasn't here yet. Thanks. Bosch moved toward the prosecution table, having to weave around two groupings of defense lawyers telling war stories, while waiting for the judge to take the bench. In the first position at the table was a woman Bosch didn't recognize. She would be the arraignment's deputy, assigned to the courtroom. She would routinely handle 80% of the arraignments, as most of the cases were minor in nature and had not yet been assigned to prosecutors. In front of her on the table was a stack of files, the morning's cases, half a foot high. Bosch showed her his badge, too. Do you know if George Portugal is coming down for the Delacroix arraignment? It's a Thursday. Yes, he is, she said, without looking up. I just talked to him. She now looked up, and Bosch saw her eyes go to the cut on his cheek. He'd taken the butterfly bandages off before his shower that morning, but the wound was still quite noticeable. It's not going to happen for an hour or so. Delacroix has a public defender. That looks like it hurts. Only when I smile. Can I use your phone? Until the judge comes out. Bosch picked up the phone and called the DA's office, which was 3 floors above. He asked for Portugal and was transferred. Yeah, it's Bosch. All right if I come up? We've got to talk. I'm here until I'm called down to arraignments. See you in 5. On the way out, Bosch told the bailiff that if a detective named Edgar checked in, he should be sent up to the DA's office. The bailiff said no problem. The hallway outside the courtroom was teeming with lawyers and citizens, all with some business with the courts. Everybody seemed to be on a cell phone. The marble floor and high ceiling took all of the voices and multiplied them into a fierce cacophony of white noise. Bosch ducked into the little snack bar and had to wait more than 5 minutes in line just to buy a coffee. After he was out, he legged it up the fire exit stairs because he didn't want to lose another 5 minutes waiting for one of the horribly slow elevators. When he stepped into Portugal's small office, Edgar was already there. We were beginning to wonder where you were, Portugal said. What the hell happened to you? Edgar added after seeing Bosch's cheek. It's a long story, and I'm about to tell it. He took the other chair in front of Portugal's desk and put his coffee down on the floor next to him. He realized he should have brought cups for Portugal and Edgar, so he decided not to drink in front of them. He opened his briefcase on his lap and took out a folded section of the Los Angeles Times. He closed the briefcase and put it on the floor. So what's going on? Portugal said, clearly anxious about the reason Bosch had called the meeting. Bosch started unfolding the newspaper. What's going on is we charged the wrong guy and we better fix it before he gets arraigned. Whoa, shit! I knew you were going to say something like that, Portugal said. I don't know if I want to hear this. You are messing up a good thing, Bosch. I don't care what I'm doing. If the guy didn't do it, he didn't do it. But he told us he did it, several times. Look, Edgar said to Portugal, let Harry say what he wants to say. We don't want to fuck this up. It may be too late with Mr. Can't leave a good thing alone here. Harry, just go on. What's wrong? Bosch told them about taking the dummy up to Wonderland Avenue and recreating Delacroix's supposed trek up the steep hillside. I made it. Just barely, he said, gently touching his cheek. But the point is, Yeah, you made it, Portugal said. You made it so Delacroix could have made it. What's the problem with that? The problem is that I was sober when I did it, and he says he wasn't. I also knew where I was going. I knew it leveled off up there. He didn't. This is all minor bullshit. No, what's bullshit is Delacroix's story. Nobody dragged that kid's body up there. He was alive when he was up there. Somebody killed him up there. Portugal shook his head in frustration. This is all wild conjecture, Detective Bosch. I'm not going to stop this whole process because it's conjecture, not wild conjecture. Bosch looked over at Edgar, but his partner didn't look back at him. He had a glum look on his face. Bosch looked back at Portugal. Look, I'm not done. There's more. After I got home last night, I remembered Delacroix's cat. We left it in his trailer and told him we'd take care of it, but we forgot. So I went back. Bosch could hear Edgar breathing heavily, and he knew what the problem was. Edgar had been left out of the loop by his own partner. It was embarrassing for him to be getting this information at the same time as Portugal. In a perfect world, Bosch would have told him what he had before going to the prosecutor, but there hadn't been time for that. All I was going to do was feed the cat. But when I got there, somebody was already in the trailer. It was his daughter.
Sheila? Edgar said. What was she doing there?
The news was apparently surprising enough for Edgar to no longer care if Portugal knew he was out of the latest investigative moves. She was searching the place. She claimed she was there for the cat, too. But she was searching the place when I got there.
For what? Edgar said.
She wouldn't tell me. She claimed she wasn't looking for anything. But after she left, I stayed. I found some things. Bosch held up the newspaper. This is Sunday's Metro section. It has a pretty big story on the case, mostly a generic feature about forensics on cases like this. But there's a lot of detail about our case from an unnamed source, mostly about the crime scene. Bosch thought after reading the article the first time in Delacroix's trailer the night before that the source was probably Teresa Corazon, since she was quoted by name in the article in regard to generic information about bone cases. He was aware of the trading that went on between reporters and sources, direct attribution for some information, no attribution for other information. But the identity of the source wasn't important to the present discussion, and he didn't bring it up.
So there was an article, Portugal asked. What does it mean?
Well, it reveals that the bones were in a shallow grave and that it appeared that the body was not buried with the use of any tools. It also says that a knapsack had been buried along with the body. A lot of other details. Also details left out, like no mention of the kid's skateboard.
Your point being? Portugal asked with a bored tone in his voice.
That if you were going to put together a false confession, a lot of what you'd need is right here.
Oh, come on, detective.
Delacroix gave us much more than the crime scene details. He gave us the killing itself, the driving around with the body, all of that.
All of that was easy. It can't be proved or disproved. There were no witnesses.
We'll never find the car because it's been squashed to the size of a mailbox in some junkyard in the valley. All we have is his story. And the only place where his story meets the physical evidence is the crime scene. And every marker he gave us, he could have gotten from this.
He tossed the newspaper onto Portugal's desk, but the prosecutor didn't even look at it.
He leaned his elbows on the desk and brought his hands flat against each other and spread his fingers wide. Bosch could see his muscles flexing under his shirt sleeves and realized he was doing some kind of an at-your-desk exercise. Portugal spoke while his hands pushed against each other. I work out the tension this way. He finally stopped, releasing his breath loudly and leaning back in his seat.
Okay, he had the ability to concoct a confession if he wanted to do it.
Why would he want to do it?
We're talking about his own son. Why would he say he killed his own son if he didn't?
Because of these, Bosch said. He reached into his inside jacket pocket and took out an envelope that was folded in half. He leaned forward and gently put it down on top of the newspaper on Portugal's desk. As Portugal picked up the envelope and started to open it, Bosch said, I think that was what Sheila was looking for in the trailer last night. I found it in the night table next to her father's bed. It was underneath the bottom drawer, a hiding place there. You had to take the drawer out to find it. She didn't do that. From the envelope, Portugal took a stack of Polaroid photos. He started looking through them.
Oh, God, he said almost immediately. Is this her? The daughter? I don't want to look at these.
He shuffled through the remaining photos quickly and put them down on the desk. Edgar got up and leaned over the desk. With one finger, he spread the photos out on the desk so he could view them. His jaw drew tight, but he didn't say anything. The photos were old. The white borders were yellowed, the colors of the images almost washed out by time. Bosch used Polaroids on the job all the time. He knew by the degradation of the colors that the photos on the desk were far more than a decade old, and some of them were older than others. There were 14 photos in all. The constant in each was a naked girl. Based on physical changes to the girl's body and hair length, he had guessed that the photos spanned at least a 5-year period. The girl innocently smiled in some of the photos. In others, there was sadness, and maybe even anger, evident in her eyes. It had been clear to Bosch from the moment he first looked at them that the girl in the photos was Sheila Delacroix. Edgar sat back down heavily. Bosch could no longer tell if he was upset by being so far behind on the case or by the content of the photos. "Yesterday this was a slam dunk," Portugal said. "Today it's a can of worms. I assume you're going to give me your theory on these, Detective Bosch?" Bosch nodded. "You start with the family," he said. As he spoke, he leaned forward and collected the photos, squared the edges, and put them back in the envelope. He didn't like them being on display. He held the envelope in his hand. "For one reason or another, the mother's weak," he said. "Too young to marry, too young to have kids. The boy she has is too hard to handle. She sees where her life is going and she decides she doesn't want to go there. She ups and splits. And that leaves Sheila. To pick up with the boy and to fend for herself with the father." Bosch glanced from Portugal to Edgar to see how he was playing so far. Both men seemed hooked by the story. Bosch held the envelope with the photos up. "Obviously a hellish life. And what could she do about it? She could blame her mother, her father, her brother. But who could she lash out against? Her mother was gone. Her father was big and overpowering, in control. That only left Arthur." He noticed a subtle shake of Edgar's head. "What are you saying, that she killed him? That doesn't make sense. She's the one who called us and gave us the ID." "I know. But her father doesn't know she called us." Edgar frowned. Portugal leaned forward and started doing his hand exercise again. "I don't think I'm following you, Detective," he said. "How does this have anything to do with whether or not he killed the son?" Bosch also leaned forward and became more animated. He held the envelope up again as if it was the answer to everything. "Don't you see? The bones. All the injuries. We had it wrong. It wasn't the father who hurt him. It was her, Sheila. She was abused and she turned right around and became the abuser. To Arthur." Portugal dropped his hands to the desk and shook his head. "So you are saying that she killed the boy and then 20 years later called up and gave you a key clue in the investigation? Don't tell me. You're going to say she has amnesia about killing him, right?" Bosch let the sarcasm go. "No, I'm saying she didn't kill him. But her record of abuse led her father to suspect she did. All these years Arthur's been gone, the father thought she did it. And he knew why." Once more, Bosch proffered the envelope of photos. "And so he carried the guilt of knowing his actions with Sheila caused it all. Then the bones come up, he reads it in the paper and puts 2 and 2 together. We show up and he starts confessing before we are 3 feet in the door." Portugal raised his hands wide. "Why?" Bosch had been turning it over in his mind ever since he had found the photos. "Redemption." "Oh, please. I'm serious. The guy's getting old. Broken down. When you have more to look back at than forward to, you start thinking about the things you've done. You try making up for things. He thinks his daughter killed his son because of his own actions. So now he's willing to take the fall for her. After all, what's he got to lose? He lives in a trailer next to the freeway and works at a driving range. This is a guy who once had a shot at fame and fortune. Now look at him. He could be looking at this as his last shot at making up for everything. And he's wrong about her but doesn't know it. That's right. Portugal kicked his chair back from his desk. It was on wheels, and he let it bang into the wall behind his desk. I got a guy waiting down there I could put in cue with one hand tied to my balls, and you come in here and want me to kick him loose? Bosch nodded. If I'm wrong, you could always charge him again. But if I'm right, he's going to try to plead guilty down there. No trial, no lawyer, nothing. He wants to plead, and if the judge lets him, then we're done. Whoever really killed Arthur is safe. Bosch looked over at Edgar. What do you think?
I think you got your mojo working.
Portugal smiled, but not because he found any humor in the situation. Two against one. That's not fair. There's two things we can do, Bosch said, to help be sure. He's probably down there in the holding tank by now. We can go down there, tell him it was Sheila who gave us the ID, and flat out ask him if he's covering for her. And ask him to take a polygraph. They're worthless. We can't admit them, and I'm not talking about court. I'm talking about bluffing him. If he's lying, he won't take it. Portugal pulled his chair back to his desk. He picked up the paper and glanced at the story for a moment. His eyes then appeared to take a roving inventory of the desktop while he thought and came to a decision. Okay, he finally said. Go do it. I'm dropping the charge. For now. Chapter 44 Bosch and Edgar walked out to the elevator alcove and stood silently after Edgar pushed the down button. Bosch looked at his blurred image reflected in the stainless steel doors of the elevator. He looked over at Edgar's reflection and then directly at his partner. So, he said, how pissed off are you?
Somewhere between very and not too.
Bosch nodded.
You really left me with my dick in my hand in there, Harry.
I know. I'm sorry. You want to just take the stairs?
Have patience, Harry. What happened to your cell phone last night? You break it or something?
Boss shook his head.
No, I just wanted to...
I wasn't sure of what I was thinking, and so I wanted to check things out on my own first. Besides, I knew you had the kid on Thursday nights. Then running into Sheila at the trailer, that was out of left field.
What about when you started searching the place? You could have called. My kid was back home asleep by then.
Yeah, I know. I should have, Jer. Edgar nodded, and that was the end of it.
You know, this theory of yours put us at ground zero now, he said.
Yeah, ground zero. We're going to have to start over, look at everything again.
You going to work it this weekend?
Yeah, probably.
Then call me.
I will. Finally, Bosch's impatience got the better of him. Fuck it. I'm taking the stairs. I'll see you down there. He left the alcove and went to the emergency stairwell. Chapter 45 Through an assistant in Sheila Delacroix's office, Bosch and Edgar learned that she was working out of a temporary production office on the west side, where she was casting a television pilot called The Closers. Bosch and Edgar parked in a reserved lot full of Jaguars and BMWs and went into a brick warehouse that had been divided into two levels of offices. There were paper signs taped on the wall that said casting and showed arrows pointing the way. They went down a long hallway and then up a rear staircase. When they reached the second floor, they came into another long hallway that was lined with men in dark suits that were rumpled and out of style. Some of the men wore raincoats and fedoras. Some were pacing and gesturing and talking quietly to themselves. Bosch and Edgar followed the arrows and turned into a large room lined with chairs holding more men in bad suits. They all stared as the partners walked to a desk at the far end of the room, where a young woman sat, studying the names on a clipboard. There were stacks of 8x10 photos on the desk and script pages. From beyond a closed door behind the woman, Bosch could hear the muffled sounds of tense voices. They waited until the woman looked up from her clipboard. "We need to see Sheila Delacroix," Bosch said.
"And your names?"
"Detectives Bosch and Edgar." She started to smile, and Bosch took out his badge and let her see it.
"You guys are good," she said. "Did you get the sides already?"
"Excuse me?"
"The sides. And where are your headshots?"
Bosch put it together. "We're not actors. We're real cops. Would you please tell her we need to see her right away?" The woman continued to smile.
"Is that real, that cut on your cheek?" she said.
"It looks real."
Bosch looked at Edgar and nodded toward the door. Simultaneously, they went around both sides of her desk and approached the door.
"Hey, she's taking a reading! You can't—"
Bosch opened the door and stepped into a small room where Sheila Delacroix was sitting behind a desk, watching a man seated on a folding chair in the middle of the room. He was reading from a page of script. A young woman was in the corner behind a video camera on a tripod. In another corner, two men sat on folding chairs watching the reading. The man reading the script didn't stop when Bosch and Edgar entered.
"The proof's in your pudding, you mutt," he said.
"You left your DNA all over the scene. Now get up and get against—"
"Okay, okay," Delacroix said. "Stop there, Frank." She looked up at Bosch and Edgar.
"What is this?"
The woman from the desk roughly pushed past Bosch into the room.
"I'm sorry, Sheila, these guys just bullied their way in like they're real cops or something."
"We need to talk to you, Sheila," Bosch said. "Right now."
"I'm in the middle of a reading. Can't you see that I—"
"We're in the middle of a murder investigation. Remember?" She threw a pen down on the desk and pushed her hands up through her hair. She turned to the woman on the video camera, which was now focused on Bosch and Edgar.
"Okay, Jennifer, turn that off," she said. "Everybody, I need a few minutes. Frank, I am very sorry. You were doing great. Can you stay and wait a few minutes? I promise to take you first, as soon as I'm done."
Frank stood up and smiled brilliantly.
"No problem, Sheila. I'll be right outside."
Everybody shuffled out of the room, leaving Bosch and Edgar alone with Sheila.
"Well," she said after the door closed, "with an entrance like that, you really should be actors."
She tried smiling, but it didn't work. Bosch came over to the desk. He remained standing. Edgar leaned his back against the door. They had decided on the way over that Bosch would handle her. She said,
"The show I'm casting is about two detectives called the Closers because they have a perfect record of closing cases nobody else seems able to. I guess there's no such thing in real life, is there?"
"Nobody's perfect," Bosch said. "Not even close."
"What is so important that you had to come bursting in here embarrassing me like that?"
"Couple things. I thought you might want to know that I found what you were looking for last night, and—"
"I told you I wasn't—"
"Your father was released from custody about an hour ago."
"What do you mean, released? You said last night he wouldn't be able to make bail."
"He wouldn't have been able to, but he's not charged with the crime anymore."
"But he confessed. You said he—"
"Well, he deconfessed this morning. That was after we told him we were going to put him on a polygraph machine and mentioned that it was you who called us up and gave us the tip that led to the ID of your brother." She shook her head slightly.
"I don't understand."
"I think you do, Sheila. Your father thought you killed Arthur. You were the one who hit him all the time, who hurt him, who put him in the hospital that time after hitting him with the bat. When he disappeared, your father thought maybe you'd finally gone all the way and killed him, then hidden the body. He even went into Arthur's room and got rid of that little bat, in case you would use that again. Sheila put her elbows on the desk and hid her face in her hands. So when we showed up, he started confessing. He was willing to take the fall for you to make up for what he did to you. For this. Bosch reached into his pocket and took out the envelope containing the photos. He dropped it onto the desk between her elbows. She slowly lowered her hands and picked it up. She didn't open the envelope. She didn't have to. How's that for a reading, Sheila?
You people. Is this what you do? Invade people's lives like this? I mean, their secrets? Everything?
We're the closers, Sheila. Sometimes we have to. Bosch saw a case of water bottles on the floor next to her desk. He reached down and opened a bottle for her. He looked at Edgar, who shook his head. Bosch got another bottle for himself, pulled the chair Frank had used close to her desk, and sat down. Listen to me, Sheila. You were a victim. You were a kid. He was your father. He was strong and in control. There's no shame for you in being a victim. She didn't respond. Whatever baggage you carry with you, now is the time to lose it. To tell us what happened. Everything. I think there's more than what you told us before. We're back at square one and we need your help. This is your brother we're talking about. He opened the bottle and took a long draw of water. For the first time, he noticed how warm it was in the room. Sheila spoke while he took his second drink from the bottle.
I understand something now.
What is that? She was staring down at her hands. When she spoke, it was like she was speaking to herself. Or to nobody.
After Arthur was gone, my father never touched me again. I thought it was because I had become undesirable in some way. I was overweight, ugly. I think now maybe it was because he was afraid of what he thought I had done or what I might be able to do.
She put the envelope back down on the desk. Bosch leaned forward again. Sheila, is there anything else about that time, about that last day that you didn't tell us before? Anything that can help us? She nodded very slightly, and then bowed her head, hiding her face behind her raised fists.
I knew he was running away, she said slowly. And I didn't do anything to stop him.
Bosch moved forward on the edge of the seat. He spoke gently to her. How so, Sheila? There was a long pause before she answered.
When I came home from school that day, he was there, in his room.
So he did come home?
Yes, for a little bit. His door was open a crack and I looked in. He didn't see me. He was putting things into his book bag. Clothes, things like that. I knew what he was doing. He was packing and was going to run. I went into my room and closed the door. I wanted him to go. I guess I hated him, I don't know. But I wanted him gone. To me, he was the cause of everything. I just wanted him to be gone. I stayed in my room until I heard the front door close.
She raised her face and looked at Bosch. Her eyes were wet, but Bosch had often before seen that in a purging of guilt and truth came a strength. He saw it in her eyes now.
I could have stopped him, but I didn't. And that's what I've had to live with. Now that I know what happened to him.
Her eyes went off past Bosch, somewhere over his shoulder. Where she could see the wave of guilt coming toward her. Thank you, Sheila. Bosch said softly. Is there anything else you know that could help us? She shook her head. We'll leave you alone now. He got up and moved the chair back to the spot in the middle of the room. He then came back to the desk and picked up the envelope containing the Polaroids. He headed toward the office door and Edgar opened it. What will happen to him? She asked. They turned around and looked back. Edgar closed the door. Bosch knew she was talking about her father. Nothing, he said. What he did to you is long past any statute of limitation. He goes back to his trailer. She nodded, without looking up at Bosch. Sheila, he may have been a destroyer at one time, but time has a way of changing things. It's a circle. It takes power away and gives it to those who once had none. Right now, your father is the one who is destroyed. Believe me. He can't hurt you anymore. He's nothing. What will you do with the photographs? Bosch looked down at the envelope in his hand and then back up at her. They have to go into the file. Nobody will see them.
I want to burn them.
Burn the memories. She nodded. Bosch was turning to go when he heard her laugh, and he looked back at her. She was shaking her head. What?
Nothing. It's just that I've got to sit here and listen to people trying to talk and sound like you all day. And I know right now nobody will come close. Nobody will get it right.
That's show business, Bosch said. As they headed back down the hallway to the stairs, Bosch and Edgar passed by all the actors again. In the stairwell, the one named Frank was saying his lines out loud. He smiled at the true detectives as they passed.
Hey guys, you guys are for real, right? How do you think I was doing in there?
Bosch didn't answer.
You were great, Frank, Edgar said. You're a closer, man. The proof is in the pudding.
Chapter 46 At 2 o'clock Friday afternoon, Bosch and Edgar made their way through the squad room to the homicide table. They had driven from the west side to Hollywood in virtual silence. It was the 10th day of the case. They were no closer to the killer of Arthur Delacroix than they had been during all the years that Arthur Delacroix's bones had lain silently on the hillside above Wonderland Avenue. All they had to show for their 10 days was a dead cop and the suicide of an apparently reformed pedophile. As usual, there was a stack of pink phone messages left for Bosch at his place. There was also an inter-office dispatch envelope. He picked up the envelope first, guessing he knew what was in it. About time, he said. He opened the envelope and slid his mini cassette recorder out of it. He pushed the play button to check the battery. He immediately heard his own voice. He lowered the volume and turned off the device. He slipped it into his jacket pocket and dropped the envelope into the trash can by his feet. He shuffled through the phone messages. Almost all were from reporters. Live by the media, die by the media, he thought. He would leave it to the media relations office to explain to the world how a man who confessed to and was charged with a murder one day was exonerated and released the next. You know, Bosch said to Edgar, in Canada the cops don't have to tell the media jack about a case until it's over. It's like a media blackout on every case.
Plus, they've got that round bacon up there, Edgar replied.
What are we doing here, Harry?
There was a message from the family counselor at the medical examiner's office telling Bosch that the remains of Arthur Delacroix had been released to his family for burial on Sunday. Bosch put it aside so he could call back to find out about the funeral arrangements and which member of the family had claimed the remains. He went back to the messages and came upon a pink slip that immediately gave him pause. He leaned back in his chair and studied it, a tightness coming over his scalp and going down the back of his neck. The message came in at 10:35, and was from a Lieutenant Bolenbach in the Office of Operations, the O3 as it was more popularly known by the rank and file. The O3 was where all personnel assignments and transfers were issued. A decade before, when Bosch was moved to the Hollywood Division, he had gotten the word after a forthwith from the O3. Same thing with Kiz Ryder going to RHD the year before. Bosch thought about what Irving had said to him in the interview room 3 days earlier. He guessed that the O3 was now about to begin an effort to achieve the deputy chief's wish for Bosch's retirement. He took the message as a sign he was being transferred out of Hollywood. His new assignment would likely involve some freeway therapy, a posting far from his home and requiring long drives each day to and from work. It was a frequently used management tool for convincing cops they might be better off turning in the badge and doing something else. Bosch looked at Edgar. His partner was going through his own collection of phone messages, none of which appeared to have stopped him the way the one in Bosch's hand had. He decided not to return the call yet or to tell Edgar about it. He folded the message and put it in his pocket. He took a look around the squad room, at all the bustling activity of the detectives. He would miss it if the new assignment wasn't a posting with the same kind of ebb and flow of adrenaline. He didn't care about freeway therapy. He could take the best punch they could give and not care. What he did care about was the job, the mission. He knew that without it, he was lost. He went back to the messages. The last one in the stack, meaning it was the first one received, was from Antoine Jesper in Sid. He had called at 10 that morning. "Shit," Bosch said. "What?" Edgar said. "I'm gonna have to go downtown. I still have the dummy I borrowed last night in my trunk. I think Jesper needs it back." He picked up the phone and was about to call Sid when he heard his and Edgar's names called from the far end of the squad room. It was Lieutenant Billets. She signaled them to her office. "Here we go," Edgar said as he got up. "Harry, you can have the honors. You tell her where we're at on this thing. More like where we aren't at." Bosch did. In 5 minutes, he brought Billets completely up to date on the case and its latest reversal and lack of progress. "So, where do we go from here?" she asked when he was finished.
"We start over. Look at everything we've got, see what we missed. We go to the kids' school, see what records they have, look at yearbooks, try to contact classmates, things like that."
Billets nodded. If she knew anything about the call from O3, she wasn't letting on. "I think the most important thing is that spot up there on the hill," Bosch added.
"How so?"
"I think the kid was alive when he got up there. That's where he was killed. We have to figure out what or who brought him up there. We're going to have to go back in time on that whole street. Profile the whole neighborhood. It's going to take time." She shook her head.
"Well, we don't have time to work it full time," she said. "You guys just sat out of the rotation for 10 days. This isn't RHD. That's the longest I've been able to hold a team out since I got here."
"So we're back in?" She nodded.
"And right now, it's your up. The next case is yours."
Bosch nodded. He had assumed that was coming. In the 10 days they'd been working the case, the two other Hollywood homicide teams had both caught cases. It was now their turn. It was rare to get such a long ride on a divisional case anyway. It had been a luxury. Too bad they hadn't turned the case, he thought. Bosch also knew that by putting them back on the rotation, Billets was making a tacit acknowledgement that she wasn't expecting the case to clear. With each day that a case stayed open, the chances of clearing it dropped markedly. It was a given in homicide, and it happened to everybody. There were no closers.
"Okay," Billets said. "Anything else anybody wants to talk about?"
She looked at Bosch with a raised eyebrow. He suddenly thought maybe she did know something about the call from O3. He hesitated, then shook his head along with Edgar.
"Okay, guys. Thanks."
They went back to the table, and Bosch called Jesper, The dummy's safe, he said, when the criminalist picked up the phone. I'll bring it down later today.
Cool, man. But that wasn't why I called. I just wanted to tell you I can make a little refinement on that report I sent you on the skateboard. That is, if it still matters.
Bosch hesitated for a moment. Not really, but what do you want to refine, Antoine? Bosch opened the murder book in front of him and leafed through it until he found the Sid report. He looked at it as Jesper spoke.
Well, in there I said we could put manufacture of the board between February of 78 and June of 86, right?
Right. I'm looking at it.
Okay, well, I can now cut more than half of that time period.
This particular board was made between 78 and 80. 2 years. I don't know if that means anything to the case or not. Bosch scanned the report. Jesper's amendment to the report didn't really matter, since they had dropped Trent as a suspect, and the skateboard had never been linked to Arthur Delacroix. But Bosch was curious about it anyway.
How'd you cut it down?
It says here the same design was manufactured until 86.
It was. But this particular board has a date on it. 1980.
Bosch was puzzled.
Wait a minute. Where?
I didn't see any. I took the trucks off. You know, the wheels.
I had some time here between things, and I wanted to see if there were any manufacture markings on the hardware. You know, patent or trademark coating.
There weren't.
But then I saw that somebody had scratched the date in the wood. Like, carved it in on the underside of the board, and then it was covered up by the truck assembly.
You mean, like, when the board was made?
No, I don't think so. It's not a professional job. In fact, it was hard to read. I had to put it under glass and angled light. I just think it was the original owner's way of marking his board in a secret way in case there was ever a dispute or something over ownership. Like if somebody stole it from him. Like I said in the report, bony boards were the choice board for a while there. They were hard to get. Might have been easier to steal one than find one in a store. So the kid who had this one took off the back truck. This would have been the original truck, not the current wheels, and carved in the date, 1980 A.D.
Bosch looked over at Edgar. He was on the phone, speaking with his hand cupped over the mouthpiece. A personal call.
You said A.D.?
Yeah, you know, as in Anno Domini, or however you say it.
It's Latin. It means the year of our Lord. I looked it up.
No. It means Arthur Delacroix.
What? Who's that?
That's the Vic, Antoine.
Arthur Delacroix. As in A.D.
Damn! I didn't have the Vic's name here, Bosch.
You filed all of this evidence while he was still a John Doe and never amended it, man. I didn't even know you had an I.D.
Bosch wasn't listening to him. A surge of adrenaline was moving through his body. He knew his pulse was quickening.
Antoine, don't move. I'm coming down there.
I'll be here. Chapter 47. The freeway was crowded with people getting an early start on the weekend. Bosch couldn't keep his speed as he headed downtown. He had a feeling of pulsing urgency. He knew it was because of Jesper's discovery and the message from O3. He turned his wrist on the wheel so he could see his watch and check the date. He knew that transfers usually took place at the end of a pay period. There were 2 pay periods a month, beginning the 1st and the 15th. If the transfer they were going to put on him was immediate, he knew that gave him only 3 or 4 days to wrap up the case. He didn't want to be taken off it, to leave it in Edgar's or anybody else's hands. He wanted to finish it. Bosch reached into his pocket and brought out the phone slip. He unfolded it, driving with the heels of his palms on the wheel. He studied it for a moment, and then got out his phone. He punched in the number from the message and waited. Office of Operations, Lieutenant Bolenbach speaking. Bosch clicked the phone off. He felt his face grow hot. He wondered if Bolenbach had caller ID on his phone. He knew that delaying the call was ridiculous because what was done, whether he called in to get the news or not. He put the phone and the message aside and tried to concentrate on the case, particularly the latest information Antoine Jesper had provided about the skateboard found in Nicholas Trent's house. Bosch realized that after 10 days the case was wholly out of his grasp. A man he had fought with others in the department to clear was now the only suspect, with apparent physical evidence tying him to the victim. The thought that immediately poked through all of this was that maybe Irving was right. It was time for Bosch to go. His phone chirped, and he immediately thought it was Bolenbach. He was not going to answer, but then decided his fate was unavoidable. He flipped open the phone. It was Edgar.
Harry, what are you doing?
I told you I had to go to Sid. He didn't want to tell him about Jesper's latest discovery until he had seen it for himself.
I could have gone with you.
Would have been a waste of your time.
Yeah, well, listen, Harry. Bullets is looking for you, and there's a rumor floating around up here that you caught a transfer.
Don't know anything about it.
Well, you're going to let me know if something's happening, aren't you?
We've been together a long time. You'll be the first, Jerry. When Bosch got to Parker Center, he had one of the patrolmen stationed in the lobby help him lug the dummy up to Sid, where he returned it to Jesper, who took it and carried it easily to its storage closet. Jesper led Bosch into a lab where the skateboard was on an examination table. He turned on a light that was mounted on a stand next to the board, then turned off the overhead light. He swung a mounted magnifying glass over the skateboard and invited Bosch to look. The angled light created small shadows in the etchings of the wood, allowing the letters to be clearly seen. 1980 A.D. Bosch could definitely see why Jesper had jumped to the conclusion he did about the letters, especially since he did not have the case victim's name. "It looks like somebody sanded it down," Jesper said, while Bosch continued to look. "I bet what happened was that the whole board was rehabbed at one point. New trucks and new lacquer." Bosch nodded. "All right," he said, after straightening up from the magnifying glass. "I'm going to need to take this with me. Maybe show it to some people."
"I'm done with it," Jesper said. "It's all yours."
He turned the overhead light back on. "Did you check under these other wheels?"
"Course.
Nothing there, though. So I put the truck back on." "You got a box or something?"
"Oh, I thought you were going to ride it out of here, Harry."
Bosch didn't smile.
"That's a joke."
"Yeah, I know." Jesper left the room and came back with an empty cardboard file box that was long enough to contain the skateboard. He put the skateboard in it, along with the detached set of wheels and the screws, which were in a small plastic bag. Bosch thanked him.
"Did I do good, Harry?"
Bosch hesitated and then said, "Yeah, I think so, Antoine." Jesper pointed to Bosch's cheek.
"Shaving?"
"Something like that." The drive back to Hollywood was even slower on the freeway. Bosch finally bailed at the Alvarado exit and worked his way over to Sunset. He took it the rest of the way in, not making any better time and knowing it. As he drove, he kept thinking about the skateboard and Nicholas Trent, trying to fit explanations into the framework of time and evidence that they had. He couldn't do it. There was a piece missing from the equation. He knew that at some level and at some place it all made sense. He was confident he would get there, if he had enough time. At 4:30, Bosch banged through the back door into the station house carrying the file box containing the skateboard. He was heading quickly down the hallway to the squad room when Mankiewicz ducked his head into the hallway from the watch office.
"Hey, Harry!"
Bosch looked back at him but kept walking. "What's up?"
"I heard the news. We're going to miss you around here."
The word traveled fast. Bosch held the box with his right arm and raised his left hand palm down and made a sweeping gesture across the flat surface of an imaginary ocean. It was a gesture usually reserved for drivers of patrol cars passing on the street. It said, "Smooth sailing to you, brother." Bosch kept going. Edgar had a large white board lying flat across his desk and covering most of Bosch's as well. He had drawn what looked like a thermometer on it. It was Wonderland Avenue, the turnaround circle at the end being the bulb at the bottom of the thermometer. From the street there were lines drawn signifying the various homes. Extending from these lines were names printed in green, blue, and black marker. There was a red X that marked the spot where the bones had been found. Bosch stood and stared at the street diagram without asking a question. "We should have done this from the start," Edgar said. "How's it work?" "The green names are residents in 1980 who moved sometime after. The blue names are anybody who came after 80 but has already left. The black names are current residents. Anywhere you see just a black name, like Gio right here, that means they've been there the whole time."
Bosch nodded.
There were only two names in black. Dr. Gio and someone named Al Hutter, who was at the end of the street farthest from the crime scene.
"Good," Bosch said, though he didn't know what use the chart would be now.
"What's in the box?" Edgar asked.
"The skateboard. Jesper found something."
Bosch put the box down on his desk and took off the top. He told and showed Edgar the scratched date and initials.
"We've got to start looking at Trent again. Maybe look at that theory you had about him moving into the neighborhood because he had buried the kid up there."
"Jesus, Harry, I was almost joking about that."
"Yeah, well, it's no joke now. We have to go back, put together a whole profile on Trent going all the way back to 1980 at least.
And meantime, we catch the next case here. That's real sweet."
"I heard on the radio it's supposed to rain this weekend. If we're lucky, it'll keep everybody inside and quiet."
"Harry, inside is where most of the killing is done."
Bosch looked across the squad room and saw Lieutenant Billet standing in her office. He was waving him in. He had forgotten that Edgar said she was looking for him. He pointed a finger at Edgar and then back at himself, asking if she wanted to see them both. Billet shook her head and pointed back only at Bosch. He knew what it was about.
"I gotta go see Bullets."
Edgar looked up at him.
He knew what it was about, too.
"Good luck, partner."
"Yeah, partner. If that's still the case." He crossed the squad room to the lieutenant's office. She was now seated behind her desk. She didn't look at him when she spoke.
"Harry, you've got a forthwith from the O3. Call Lieutenant Bollenbach before you do anything else. That's an order."
Bosch nodded. "Did you ask him where I'm going?"
"No, Harry, I'm too pissed off about it. I was afraid if I asked, I'd get into it with him, and it's got nothing to do with him. Bollenbach's just the messenger."
Bosch smiled. "You're pissed off?"
"That's right. I don't want to lose you, especially because of some bullshit grudge somebody up top has against you."
He nodded and shrugged. "Thanks, Lieutenant. Why don't you call him on speakerphone? We'll get this over with." Now she looked up at him.
"You sure? I could go get a coffee so you can have the office to yourself if you want."
"It's all right. Go ahead and make the call."
She put the phone on speaker and called Bollenbach's office. He answered right away.
"Lieutenant, this is Lieutenant Billets. I have Detective Bosch in my office."
"Very good, Lieutenant. Just let me find the order here." There was the sound of papers rustling. Then Bollenbach cleared his throat. "Detective, hi. Hieronym. Is that
Hieronymus?" Bosch said. "Rhymes with anonymous."
"Hieronymus, then. Detective Hieronymus Bosch, you are ordered to report for duty at Robbery Homicide Division at 0800 January 15. That is all. Are these orders clear to you?"
Bosch was stunned. RHD was a promotion. He had been demoted from RHD to Hollywood more than 10 years earlier. He looked at Billets, who also had a look of suspicious surprise on her face.
"Did you say RHD?
"Yes, Detective. Robbery Homicide Division. Are these orders clear?"
"What's my assignment?
I just told you. You reported. No, I mean, what do I do at RHD?